roadside cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Sing it. Song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. 34 minutes after the hour on this Friday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. Real quick, we didn't do this in the last segment, but our programming note on Monday, we'll have State Representative Shane Stringer and Dale Jackson and a guest to be named later. So we'll figure that out in due time. Always twitter.com/Jeff_Poor. Sometime in the 8 o'clock hour. I was real late today, but, I try to post a guest list. Joining us now, just every Friday, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing well. It is, it's been a busy week and with a good ending, it seems like.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see it coming, but I knew something was coming, but I didn't see $550 million coming, I guess.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I mean, my conversations with Aldott even up to yesterday indicated that they were expecting a bridge improvement program grant decision soon. I think it was probably just officially, you know, blessed this morning, but I think they kind of they've been knowing for a while that it's coming. But to your point, the amount is huge. $550 million is a giant building block of the capital stack that will be necessary to build this project, and the amount, you know, compared to other amounts awarded around the you know, around the country are just is staggering. And so a good win for our congressional delegation, the master appropriator, Katie Britt, for sure, and for Governor Ivey and the team at Aldott. They have learned over the years how to interface with and work with USDOT, talk with USDOT, and their efforts of late have borne much more fruit than their, you know, their efforts from 10 years ago. And you know, the challenge now is you've got $550 million. You got to figure out how to do the rest of it so that you don't squander this opportunity. So the real work starts now.
Well, does this kind of start things moving things back? Now, Jack Burrell in our 1819 news story on this said it looks like construction will start again, restart next year. I mean, this is what it looks like to me. You're just kind of piecemealing together what you can just to keep the ball moving, right?
Well, you do have to keep the ball moving, and I would have been hesitant to say construction will start next year. I understand everybody's anxious, but you know, Jeff, you got to realize even Aldott is saying this is a $3.5 billion project. And while you've got, you know, $550 million in hand, there's still a lot of pieces that have to fall into place and now really have to fall into place to make that work. And so, you know, those other pieces from the toll revenue study, from the TIFIA loan and approval process. There's still a mega grant request sitting out there. There may be a supplemental infra grant request sitting out there. And then, of course, the state is going to have to make up the balance, the shortfall on any of that. You know, the number they continue to espouse is $250 million. But that number is going to have to be whatever the gap is. And so there are still huge pieces of this that need to fall into place in order to make all of this happen. But to say anything other than this is a giant step in the right direction is would just be wrong. This is a good day, and it's a good day for coastal Alabama. There's just a lot of work left to do.
Well, let's talk like back of a napkin kind of tally here. You got what a grand total of $650 million in federal grant money. What do we expect that they can borrow from the toll revenue expectations? Any other revenue sources? Like what do you think the tally is that is realistic right now that the state can count on?
So as long as the toll revenue study based on the lower tolls that have been agreed to by the Metropolitan Planning Organization justify it, right, as long as the revenue study justifies it, you can borrow up to 49% of the project cost, you know, against that future revenue through a program called TIFIA. So round numbers, that's $1.75 billion of the total project cost, okay? And so you start, you know, adding this up, and you've got, now you got this $550 million, and you start adding that back into there, okay? You know, here we are, $2.3 billion. You're getting there. You're still $1.2 billion, $1.3 billion, assuming that 3.5 is a good number, short. And so you're really dependent on the balance of those federal grant programs from the government, the federal government that just gave you $550 million in one of the largest awards ever in the program's history. You're still needing some more from them, or the state's got to make up the difference. And those are big numbers for the state, and they're big numbers, you know, without federal money, but they may be doable. It just is going to eat up a lot of state resources in order to make that happen.
Well, I also feel like the clock is ticking here, Senator. I mean, every day you wait longer, the price goes up. We're just in this unfettered inflationary environment that you got to get moving on this thing, or that tag, you know, what used to be $800 million, well, now it's you know, $2-3 billion, and does it keep going up the longer we stall on this? So, like, the expediency here is kind of, seems like to me to be an issue.
But you're exactly right. I mean, if anything, history's proven, you know, that this project continues to get exponentially more expensive the more time we spend on it, and so, you know, time is of the essence. Plus, there's going to be a clock on, you know, on the expenditure of this $550 million money. I mean, it's going to have to be spent. Typically, that's a 3-year clock or so. I know with InfraGrant, it was a big deal to get the project back on the STIP so that that money didn't go away. But it's reasonable to assume that the same pressure is going to be on this $550 million to get it obligated, is the key word there, to get it obligated to make sure that you are able to expend that money. And that's going to mean all these other pieces and parts are going to have to get into place. But that expediency may work out in our favor, in that we're moving ahead and we're not seeing this thing continue to creep up in price.
What do you think a realistic expectation is for even more money from the federal government? I mean, like, we're up to $650 million now or so. How much more can you go back to that well?
Well, there are different federal grant programs out there. Still Infra, there's still Mega, and those applications are in. And Al Dutton's done a really good job working, again, with the feds here recently. And in particular, you know, particularly our congressional delegation, like Jerry Carl from this area. I mean, you know, he and I spilled some of the same blood in the same mud when we were both county commissioners working on this early on, and he deserves a lot of a credit of making all of that work. And so our congressional delegation on the House side, you know, led by Jerry Carl and again, Katie Britt and Senator Tuberville, will be so very important to make sure that this continues to, you know, we continue to get additional federal money because we need it. You know, Alabama is not a wealthy state. This is the biggest project that Alabama has ever contemplated, and it will eat up a huge amount of state resources. Any additional help the feds can give will mean that we can still do other projects in other part of the state too.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. I guess the other question I would have, anytime the federal government puts money into one of your projects, I mean, there are strings attached, there are stipulations. I mean, we're going to have a walking trail next to the bridge. I mean, like, what a bicycle path, some kind of solar panels on the bridge. I mean, like, they do all this, and this has always been the problem with taking federal money. What do you think those strings attached are?
Oh, the biggest string that is attached to this project is the elevation of the bayway. I mean, that's what made this thing double in price, was the requirement from USDOT that we demolish and rebuild the existing bayway. And all the other stuff is stuff we shake our head at, right? The lighting and the, you know, pathways and all that. But the thing that really ballooned this cost was the elevation of the bayway. And so there are a lot of those strings attached, but it is also, you know, a federal interstate. And so with that comes an awful lot of federal requirements and hoops you just have to jump through. But again, I will say that ALDOT and our congressional delegation has done a heck of a job working with USDOT to say, guys, here's where we are. Can we work together on this as opposed to just, hey, we put in an application and let's see what happens, and explaining those concerns and working through that. So they've turned a page from where we were 10 years ago to where we are now. It's working a whole lot better. It's almost a team effort to get this done where it really wasn't 10 years ago.
And you don't think there's any way to get around that elevated bayway requirement? What we were talking about, like, you know, 100-year flood and you still have a lot of extra room to give. I mean, what do you think? Can anything be done there?
You know, that's a really good question. In order to do that, that's part of the record of decision for the environmental impact statement, and it's set in stone. You can go back in and update that environmental document, but that takes time, energy, money, you know, all of, you know, it costs time more than anything else. We may have to do that if we can't get to the point where we can cobble together the rest of the money to be able to make this go as it is now. But this grant award of this magnitude, again, the second largest in the country, really makes you say, okay, we need to stick with the plans we've got and see if we can cobble together the rest of the funding. You probably put at risk this grant and other funding if you kick the can down the road and open the EIS back up. I would not do that unless you absolutely had to, or unless you just simply couldn't put the rest of the money together.
And, you know, just anything else there, the cost prohibition, the elevation of the bridge itself, something Katie Britt mentioned that was kind of interesting, and I think it was probably a big one of the reasons to get this done. You no longer have the hazardous cargo going through Africatown there across the Cochrane Bridge. Now it can just go straight through if this bridge is completed.
Well, that's certainly a factor, and that helps not just from the hazardous cargo standpoint, but, you know, it just helps our truckers in general and everybody else that's just, you know, trying to get from point A to point B. You know, the shortest distance is always a straight line. But I think that, again, revisiting any of your design parameters, if you can figure out how to afford this project using significant federal resources, you know, go for it. Could we do it more efficiently? You know, probably could without federal guidelines. Yeah, always, you know. And when I was on the county commission, you know, if you didn't have to use state money, it was easier. If you didn't have to use federal money, the project was easier, of course. But at the end of the day, if you've got this type of federal investment that is this big, stick with the EIS that's approved, stick with the record of decision that's approved, use the federal money and cobble together the rest of it to make it work. Failure is not an option here. You have to make it work so that you can utilize this money.
Last question here, and I ask this all the time when we talk about this, but, like, now that we're further along, we're like 5 years down the road from where we were during the 2019 debacle, like, it doesn't seem like every 50 years or so we got to revisit how to get across the Mobile Bay. Is this bridge going to be built, and is it going to be, I mean, do you feel like it's going to, like, not be obsolete when it's finally done?
Yeah, I think this is a project we'll be looking back on well over 50 years from now, and that it'll, you know, it'll be here and still be serviceable. Maintaining the tunnels, continuing to have them as options, still utilizing the Cochrane Bridge, et cetera, is a big deal as well. And so, yeah, this is a 100-year project. It's not a 50-year project, and it'll likely last that long, especially, you know, with the bayway improvements. They'll last for a long time. And this is huge for the city of Mobile. You know, it's not my district, but it's hard to understate how big this is for their investment in downtown and specifically the airport at Berkeley. The Berkeley airport doesn't work without this bridge, so having this bridge makes a huge difference to them and the investment they're making there.
Well, it's just this. It's from a capacity standpoint, it's going to be I mean, I don't know what the traffic studies say, and I know Baldwin County's growing, and I don't even know that if you would think of Baldwin County as a bedroom community of Mobile even 100 years from now, if it's not doing its own thing, like a Hoover, Birmingham sort of situation. But, I mean, this is going to be good enough to service whatever the traffic projections are long after you and I are gone.
I do. I think again, with the existing infrastructure on the causeway, this bridge, the tunnels, yes, I think that with the growth, this will continue to be sufficient for most of our lifetimes. And there are few infrastructure projects that I feel comfortable saying that about, but I do with this one. It's a lot of projects. Again, the biggest project Aldot has ever contemplated. And so, again, big win for the governor, big win for our congressional delegation, big win for Jerry Carl. And it's got to be, I hate that he's leaving us. It's got to be a sweet note for him to leave on, though, to be able to secure something like this. So congrats to all involved.
Senator, thanks for making time for us. We got to leave it there, but we'll talk again next week.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Senator Chris Elliott. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Hello, West Virginia coal miner. Let me thank you.